everybody, and welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast. Oh God, it hurts!
Oh God, it hurts!
I am JJJ, aka the Six Button Samurai, and with me, as always, on this fine podcast is my esteemed co-host, Mr. Game Agent ET. How are you, Eddie?
What's up? It's spring break. I am so happy. I get maybe 2 weeks off if I'm lucky. Not from work, but from doing anything that's considered work. But I'm just glad that I have a little bit of respite so I can recover. Maybe play some games. How about you? What's going on?
Lately, as far as the gameplay tip, mostly just been splitting some fine time between Earthbound and Tekken 8.
Nice.
Straight ahead, one relieves the other sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, it's always good to have at least two games to kind of rotate around, because it's always a thing to get too burned out on one game if you focus down on it. So especially an RPG, you need some sort of like a beat 'em up or shoot 'em up or
some kind of action-y short form chaser, as it were,
or other kinds of ups.
Yeah. So yeah. Earthbound continues to be just absolutely delightful.
It's a great RPG.
Yeah, so many interesting ways of doing things and surprising the player. And man, like, I understand that, like, it's sort of a set in stone device where it's like, you know, with your classic JRPGs, you've got your dungeons and your towns and your save points, and, you know, if you die going too hard in a dungeon, you know, you die and you lose all of your progress since the last save. And the fact that Earthbound doesn't foist that upon you is kind of amazing. And to be honest, I think it's actually had the inverse effect where, like, I take a lot more risks in dungeons just, like, pushing ahead. Because I know that, you know, it's not going to cost me everything if I, you know, am foolish or take the wrong tactic in a battle or something. So it's a damn good time. That's all I have to say.
It is an interesting mechanic because it helps you focus more on the story itself. And when it comes to RPG culture, Why would it be good for us to experience that kind of a loss? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like losing all that material.
I get it in the abstract that it's supposed to teach you to, like, venture only so far out or really kind of, like, emphasize grind time or, you know, materials management. Like, hey, you better have X number of potions and tents and this, that, and the other, because
I guess
you need to save repeatedly and this, that, and the other. But I'm delighted to have seen now this game that as far back as that was sort of challenging those notions. Like, it's pretty great and it's deeply refreshing, I would say.
Yeah. I remember that game was really hard though. So yeah. It was nice.
I mean, it does have a way of kicking your ass at times, and it's very strangely limited. Like, you can carry very few things on your person, and you have to rely on, like, the delivery guy.
Yeah.
This, that, and the other to, like, take things off of you and store them. And so it's
interesting. Unique way of doing everything. Like, who is it, your dad that keeps calling you, like, to give you your allowance through your bank account?
Well, yeah, that's whenever you save. Like, you call up your dad, he tells you how much he just threw in your bank account, and
yeah,
you know, always the sage words of should get some rest, you know.
Yeah, the usual Nintendo reminder that you're playing too much.
Yeah.
You need to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
I think that started from that game, didn't it?
Oh.
I'm not sure, because I know some Wii games tell you to do that. I don't know if there's anything that kind of predate the Earthbound, well, you should get some rest warning.
Yeah.
That deserves some research.
I feel like there are other RPGs that have alluded to that same thing. Like,
really?
That might be part of what the data retrieval girl in Phantasy Star 2 says. I could also be remembering that wrong.
Okay. But haven't played that game in depth, so I don't know about that.
Yeah. But no, it's an interesting sidebar. Like, when was the first time that games that are lengthy and have a save feature started encouraging rest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But speaking of RPGs, I gotta get back on Golden Sun, because as I said in previous shows, it was getting kind of hectic, like the song.
it's getting kind of hectic.
Because the school year ends in March in Japan. Mm-hmm. So I had to prep stuff not only for my main job at the public schools, but my private job as well on Saturdays. And there's a lot more I have to do on Saturdays, oddly enough, because I'm in much more control of what happens on those in those classes compared to during the week. So a lot of taking my work home with me, and that's never fun.
Mm-hmm.
Work culture, sometimes it sucks.
Yes.
Get a job that you can really, really have free time and enjoy your life, because life is too short to be stuck in an office or wherever your workplace is.
That's all I gotta say. Seems to become increasingly difficult to compartmentalize. At any rate, we've got a smallish stack of topics to address today. The first among them, probably the most exciting thing sort of going, at least as far as you and I are concerned.
Yes.
There was finally a trailer and some additional video reveal of the forthcoming brand new chapter in the Fatal Fury saga, City of the Wolves. Did you see the trailer, Eddie?
Yes, I did. Both English and Japanese voices.
Of course you did.
And it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I love the art direction.
Yeah.
It looks very comic booky, but not overly done.
Yeah.
Gameplay looks really good, really fast compared to the original. And seems like it took a little bit of from the same page of King of Fighters 15, where the combos seem to last a little bit longer, which is good.
Yeah.
Gives it a little bit more creativity with your combos, which is what fighting games do nowadays. No longer you're restricted to like 3-hit combos. You can do like 10 plus hit combos.
Right.
At a regular. I like it. What do you think?
I was actually pleased that, because thinking about it like conceptually, I was worried, because it's like, well, you know, the idea of SNK making good 3D fighting games,
yeah,
is still a relatively, and by relative, I'm talking like the last 5 years, or maybe going back to like KOF 14, like.
Yeah.
For some people, that game never really did what they wanted to. But, you know, KOF 15 has a very clean, but if slightly, it was hard for me to enunciate, like, not really exactly the flavor that you expect visually from KOF. And so it sort of took, you know, like Samurai Showdown came out, and I actually think that one is probably like their best work visually so far. Yeah. As far as like capturing the flavor of the original series. And so I wondered, because a Fatal Fury thing, you know, that kind of goes even deeper into the ancient SNK canon, right?
Kind of.
Yeah. And so I was pleasantly surprised that this one seems to be sort of charting its own territory. It feels like that art style and the shading just has a little more texture, like a little more going on to it, which is great, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it makes it look a little more exciting. And as you said, it's always good to get more Fatal Fury lore explained, because there's a lot of lore that we don't know about with this series, especially since it's been absent for over 20 years. And right. Also the fact that not many people know that there was a Mark of the Wolves 2 that was being worked on until SNK went under, and there were leaked sprites that were going to be in the game. Mm-hmm. And one of those sprites, one of the characters, was a Joe Higashi protege, mm-hmm. which turned out to be Preacha, which is the new character in this game so far.
Right.
One of five that have been announced so far. And she looks different than what the sprites had, but it's cool that they still kept that whole notion that, oh, this is Joe Higashi's latest protege, and she's very, very spunky, and
right.
It's got a little bit of Joe in terms of his moves, things like that. But, you know, it's got her own stuff going, kind of like Kimberly from Street Fighter VI. So that'll be interesting to see how that develops. But I wonder if they're going to incorporate a lot of the stuff that they couldn't incorporate from the canceled sequel back then.
Right.
Be interesting to see if they bring that over, if they just kind of redo everything and kind of tell about it later on. You know,
is definitely like within tradition, because given that Mark of the Wolves represented like quite a bit of distance on the timeline from like Fatal Furies 2 and 3.
Yeah.
It's cool that once again, they're like, okay, like, you know, Joe Higashi fights in this Muay Thai style. There should be somebody that sort of reps that style, but like in a slightly new way. And I think all the better fighting game franchises tend to do that in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool that that's happening. I really would have, like, I was a bit kind of like, oh God, dude, Rock makes all the sense in the world, because fundamentally, like, Rock Howard is the poster child of Mark of the Wolves.
Well, not only that, the endings.
Right.
Like, you see his ending, you understand why he has to continue.
Totally. I was a bit bummed that they immediately showed Terry again, just because, like, it's Terry. You know what I mean? Like, and I get that, like, he is the SNK mascot overall,
yep.
Like, historically. But, like, can I see Marco Rodriguez? Can I see somebody else that, I don't know. Like,
yeah, they had Hotaru.
Yeah.
And they had Tizoc.
Right.
Or Griffin Mask, as he's known in Japan, I believe.
Yeah. But, the Griffin.
Yeah. The Griffin Mask. Sorry.
I think I'm trying to remember. In game, does it say the Griffin?
Yeah, I think it's the Griffin, but I think they also call him Griffin Mask. I'm not sure. But
wow.
But it'd be nice to see if, like, you know me, I like B. Jenny. And also Freeman was awesome.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see who gets cut, because unless they feel like, oh, we're going to just add everyone, it's always going to be like, okay, who are they going to cut and who's going to eventually make it back by DLC or whatnot. And it's going to be interesting to see how they've changed in terms of.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only drawback. I know it's early, but the trailer showed different types of ways to do combos with the characters that you all know and love, but it didn't show really any new moves.
Right.
And the super art that the original four that are in the trailer, it didn't really show anything different compared to Preacha, where her super art is really awesome because it looks kind of like a King of Fighters 15. Sort of dramatic type of super art where it's like, yeah, that's, you can feel that. But I hope they add some more super arts, like a different type of super art that kind of changes, so that kind of like King of Fighters 15, it makes it feel much more important than a regular super art, because I'm pretty sure they're going to have more than one type.
Well, it also sort of begs the question, like, it's going to be interesting to see how King of Fighters 15 continues to be supported via DLC.
Yeah.
And then what drops concurrently with, you know, the first release of City of the Wolves and then whatever follows. Because one thing that I thought was a little bit sort of strange and kind of, you know, slightly leaning on the microtransactions greed tip is that, like, you had a Team Samurai Showdown showing up for KOF 15.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird stylistically, but also just kind of feels like, hey, we got these character models. You know what I mean? Like,
from 14, I believe, right?
No, the Samurai Showdown team models were all from Samurai Showdown.
But wasn't Nakaruru in 14?
I think that those characters did have a place in that roster as well. And, like,
yeah,
I would still argue, like, that's kind of weird. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mind characters from other series, like, showing up. But it just feels like, I don't know, like, I'm at Taco Bell and they're giving me beef, cheese, lettuce, and a tortilla in a different form factor. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think they need to think about, like, environment and atmosphere and gameplay and, like, what really works to make each individual title stand out and be its best. And I get that you want to have a little bit of latitude to sort of juice it up in terms of, like, crossing series, but, like, KOF is the place specifically where I guess that's always been more allowed, because it always, you know, culls together characters from all the different SNK series.
Well, yeah, it's a dream match through and through, because there not many people know that a lot of these series, Art of Fighting, Fatal Fury, especially Samurai Showdown, they all happen in different time periods. So that's why there's that huge disparity in terms of, like, how they look. Or they're never going to fit because it's a dream universe. But I know what you mean. But it can work. Like, one of our favorite games is Capcom versus SNK 2, and you got Last Blade characters and Samurai Showdown characters and Rival School characters, and
that's kind of fun. Never had the Last Blade character I really liked the most, though.
Oh, which is
never had Lee.
Who is Lee?
I always wanted Lee in TBS because I thought even his style was, like, more conducive to being in that kind of fighting game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why, Haomaru wasn't too, like, hard to handle, but Nakaruru was crazy.
Right.
That's, like, how it's, like, people said, like,
Crimson Viper in Street Fighter 4 was like having a Guilty Gear character in a Street Fighter game.
Mm-hmm.
All over the place. So just like you said, maybe it doesn't fit, but it definitely pleases the fans for sure.
Yeah. So, or just expands what's possible in a given game style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to wonder what is after City of the Wolves? Because SNK nowadays, they're not really bringing out like multiple titles in a period of time. It's usually they focus on one, and then when that runs its course in 2 or 3 years, they focus on the next thing. So it's really kind of like, well, they got their major things. Well, Art of Fighting. Is that the next one? Or
yeah, I don't know if that series ever really had enough cachet. Like, I think it's still kind of a minor miracle we even got a third one.
Yeah.
I hear that. Because I think at that point, like, people were like, it's cool that these guys are just in KOF. Like, I don't really, you know what I mean?
Isn't that strange? But then again, it's probably because the fighting system in that game.
Right.
It's a little bit too archaic now.
Yeah.
It's not conducive to like fun gameplay unless you really, really amp up the speed and combos and just make it so that you don't have to, you know, depend on that spirit gauge.
Right.
Because why would you need a spirit gauge? Why would you want that just to do regular super moves, special moves? It's just,
nah.
We moved beyond that.
It's not fun.
Definitely not. But we'll see what SNK has cooking after City of the Wolves. I'm hoping for good things.
No, it would be good. You know, having a successful and healthy SNK in the fighting game arena is absolutely something that I think benefits players.
Yeah.
Overall.
I'm just grateful for that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's City of the Wolves. Going to be very exciting to see the continued outpouring of media from that title. I'm sure there's going to be a boatload of character announced trailers and the like that'll round out the rest of the year. Still for, like, did they say early 2025 for that one?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
So hopefully there'll be no delays and no hiccups, and hopefully it'll come out great.
Right. So speaking of deadlines, there was a story today that apparently the powers that be at Rockstar are worried that the production timeline for Grand Theft Auto 6 is falling into the weeds. So apparently they have urged staff to return to the office to help sort of turn that around and assure that they do not miss their previously announced 2025 release window. Thoughts? It feels like this is the kind of thing we wind up talking about a lot.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, most of us have experienced how life is like when you have to work from home or work in a remote area. And I think in terms of video game development, geez, if you do your job and do it well, why would you need to go back to the office and suffer through in-person meetings and your boss hounding over you and not being able to spend time with your family and things like that in moments where, I mean, geez, you know, your kids are growing up at a quick rate and being with your family is super important nowadays. And why do you have to go back to that kind of culture? I mean, geez, it's not like teaching where, I mean, as a teacher and well, anywhere, if you teach, yeah, it's sometimes doable when you have like a remote teaching, but there are some things you can't really do if you're away from a classroom. Like there are some activities you can't do because you need to be there in person to actually do the activities. Otherwise it's going to be very limited, but I don't see how game development necessitates that.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that given the phenomenon of the pandemic and how many games that delayed to the point where we had this really insane 2023 that was just wall-to-wall packed with ridiculously anticipated games, you know, by virtue of all those release dates slipping.
Yeah.
You know, clearly developing for these consoles now takes a lot of effort and is routinely like, it just seems like routinely it is a problem to hit these dates with these games because they tend to be packed with more things than ever. It literally just takes more time to create assets for these things. And it's no surprise that GTA 6 would be affected by something like this because we're talking about a gargantuan AAA sandbox. Like, everything that can potentially derail a big game is present in this game. You know what I mean? So it's kind of the poster child for a game that you would expect to fall into the production weeds. I don't know. Like, you know, as we saw with Cyberpunk, famously, like,
but really, can you blame it on? Is it really like the availability? I think that the people that worked on that game, they were in the office, right?
They were.
So what does it matter if if you're going to have that sort of result? I agree with that. It's just a matter of how you manage and how you do things efficiently with your group. I mean, that's all what it comes down to. And not only that, I mean, if something is not forming and you might need more time, then why not set the deadline back a little bit? I mean, I understand, like, well, this is one of the things I hate about gaming nowadays, and it's because of stockholders. Mm-hmm. Everything has to appease stockholders. You have to have things at certain times or else you don't meet your figures. And then, well, as we know nowadays, it doesn't matter what you do. You're going to get let go one way or the other.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Just game good and you're going to get fired no matter what.
Well, and then, I mean, you know, the great counterweight story to all of these layoffs, particularly as have fallen this year in the games industry.
Yeah.
You know, famously, when Satoru Iwata was faced with the prospect of Nintendo's declining profits following, you know, the anemic release of the Wii U, etc., he took a pay cut. He took a very public pay cut because he said, I don't think that if I lay off X number of our staff, and obviously I'm paraphrasing here.
Yeah.
If I lay off X number of our staff, the people that are left behind are just going to be wondering, well, I survived this cut. What happens the next time?
Exactly.
And he was very wise in his decision that, you know, if these people are going to be focused on making the best possible games they can, focused on being creative, on delivering interesting gameplay, creative solutions to problem solving, all of that, like, you know, the meat grinder of a labor situation doesn't really do a lot for creative people that are caught up with, you know, X number of deliverables.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy, you know, because, yeah, I mean, we talked about this in previous shows about what Mr. Iwata said and his his thoughts on that. Also, the fact that, you know, Super Mario Wonder is what it is because of the staff that was retained gave all those ideas, and it was over 200 employees, I believe. And then not only that, you look at how many very vital members of Nintendo have been making great games up to this day, like Koji Kondo. And recently there was a game developers conference. They're saying, I forget his name, I'm sorry. He was not someone that is as well known as Koji Kondo, but he has been a huge part of many projects in recent times.
You talking about Takashi Tezuka?
No, it was a guy that I've never heard of before.
Okay.
And they were saying, like, yeah, this guy, he's been there for years, but, you know, he needs to be recognized because he had a huge hand, ultra hand, should I say, in making games solid in terms of physics and what playability, things like that. And if this was a Western company and he got fired like within 10 years of working at Nintendo, could you imagine like the games you could not have, or the games that could not achieve the things that he was able to do? Like, literally Ultra Hand was something that many people don't realize how hard it is to program that stuff, to like combine things to make things better or to make vehicles. Like, there's a lot of things they had to like slowly pick at to say, okay, will this actually work? If not, how do we change it to make it so that it, if you do this and this, it'll work this way, instead of like, hey, just put stuff helter skelter and see if it worked or not. Like, no, there was rhyme and reason to making combined stuff to make weapons or vehicles or whatnot. Otherwise, you just have a mess of something that just doesn't flow with the game and makes it less fun to play. But yeah, that guy, he's been there for years. Thank God he's still there.
Yeah. So, absolutely. I mean,
if he had to work at home, damn it, he gets to work at wherever he wants because he's making us good games.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Like, I think about the earlier days of the games industry and when it just was all operating at a much smaller scale. And that's sort of the dark side of having these gargantuan companies like Microsoft and Sony as players in the business, because it opens up games making to all of these different forces that really didn't have sway before. But I mean, that also just has to do naturally with like the complexity of the hardware. Like, if you want to sell this many units and you want a system that's capable of doing this, 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 and this, that's kind of the gargantuan beast that has to exist to support that thing coming together in the first place. You know what I mean? So it's a very kind of chicken and egg thing to ponder, and like, well, how do you lessen the tension on like the creative people that are actually in the pits and are trying to deliver something that's fun and memorable and, you know, technically ambitious, but also not bug ridden. Yeah, it's,
I'll tell you how you can solve it.
How?
More morally responsible reps, executives, because those guys never get fired. The guys that get fired are the guys that are in the trenches with the Western studios, and that's not fair. Right. Because the executives make the dumb mistakes.
Right.
Saying like, hey, games as a service, we should totally go for that.
Hey, even though Xbox, we don't have a roadmap, should just be a TV box.
Yeah, because I saw...
Actually, that Fortnite. Guy did get fired, so... Huh? So that guy did get fired, so... Thankfully.
Yeah, but see, these guys need to be accountable for what they do. Like, Mr. Iwata held himself accountable, even though he totally didn't have to, and he makes way less than any Western exec. He did. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, Japanese executives don't have to cut their own salary in order to help a fledgling company recover from, you know, financial losses or mistakes. So that's how I feel. Hold these dudes accountable, man, because...
Well, it's tough, too, because you see examples where, like, a really key talent leaves a big company because clearly they're burnt out and, you know, they want more say over the things they make. You know, you think about, like, when Hironobu Sakaguchi left Square, right? And was pursuing other kinds of games, this, that, and the other. That's tougher yet, because for the most part, like, you get somebody that's a creative genius at doing a specific thing, the odds are that genius is not going to extend to running an office, running a company, you know, juggling the budget things. Like, those are all, like, really different and specific skill sets, and so... It's a shame when a lot of those folks leave places where, you know, they should be worshipped. They should walk on water, you know? And then it ends up sucking for everybody involved because, like, then Hideo Kojima doesn't get to work on Metal Gear Solid. You know what I mean? Like,
and some people who end up doing their own thing, like you said, they end up in a company that they try to raise up and it just falls flat because they don't have the management skills, but hopefully, you know, since it's more common, I hope they're able to pick and choose people that can work for them. But at the same time, they wouldn't be the type of people that would like cut through people like employees, like a fire sale, like, oh, our figures are lacking this quarter. I think the first thing we got to do is cut some people, eh? No.
Right.
Got to have people that you can trust make, they can make the best decisions, but at the same time, keep your employees, especially the ones that you value the most. I think as a creator, if you start up a company, I think you'll be more empathetic because you were and still are a part of the workforce.
Right.
So here's the hope.
It's very, very challenging and strange time for the games industry writ large.
Yeah.
Modern gaming sucks. Modern gaming sucks.
I
heard that a lot this past year, so don't mind me.
Yeah. At any rate, we're going to take a short little break so you can hear from some of our fellow colleagues throwing down some terrific shows right here at the Ruminations Radio Network.
What's up, gang? This is Hoptimus. You've been listening to one of the great new podcasts from Ruminations Radio Network. If you want some more tasty sound vibes, come check out my new podcast, The Retro Futurist Culture, where we talk about alternate timelines, cyberpunk, anime, and other crazy worlds. If that does not strike your fancy, we have plenty of other great shows at ruminationsradionetwork.com.
And we're back.
Woo! Back up in that ass with the resurrection.
Mm-hmm. Scarface would have wanted it this way. All right. He's still with us, actually. I shouldn't say that. He's still very much alive and doing shows. Speaking of legends that are still alive, the mighty, mighty Yuzo Koshiro just dropped some fresh new footage of his hotly awaited by me, definitely.
Me too.
New Mega Drive shooter, Earthion, or as it'll probably say on the Japanese box, Ashion. Looking really, really good.
Yeah, basically, this yesterday, There was a retro game summit convention that happened in Tokyo, and it was just the second time they've had this convention. And Mr. Koshiro brought his game over and showed the current progress of the game. He promised that it will be not only on old school Mega Drive and Genesis systems, it'll be a physical cart. You can also play it on modern systems as well. And he's looking for a release, hopefully, at best, late this year, if not next year.
I'm happy to buy that whenever it arrives. My God. Like, first of all, if you don't follow Yuzuk Shir on Twitter, or whatever the fuck it's called today, you should. Because yeah. He is marvelous. He's still very plugged in. He's still always working on, like, you know, new, like, releases of old soundtracks or different projects. The spirit still, like, glows pretty intensely from that guy. And it's great.
The soul still burns.
It very much still burns with Yuzuk Shiro.
And half of his posts are in English, too, so...
Yeah.
I'll have to translate it.
Bonus.
Yeah. And he's very... I wouldn't say he responds to everyone, but, you know, if you have a pretty nice reply or interesting question or whatnot, he could reply to you. So he's very personable.
Yeah.
In that term. In that... Yeah. Sort.
Definitely, considering what a legend that guy is in game development, definitely one of the more accessible human beings in that space.
Yeah.
So, follow him. I'm definitely very excited for Eartheon.
Just don't hassle him for shit, like Harada from Tekken 8. Because you don't want to do that to anyone. You don't want to harass anyone. You don't want to drive people away from social media. I'm just saying. Etiquette.
I would say they're in a little bit different places, though, because Harada is at the forefront of this very public game right now.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been any announcement yet. Like, I know the key thing that you're talking about here are those Tekken guest appearances.
Oh, yeah.
Which everyone is
Tifa, please. Freaking out
over or Tifa, conjecturing please. Or begging for Tifa, whatever it is, you know.
But he still does a good job. I mean, he is really cracking down on cheaters on the game.
Yeah.
And it's good because... In the last episode when we talked about customization in Tekken 8, and then I put a little link where somebody showed, like, someone hacked the game. And there's a way you can make an accessory, like, so big it covers your whole character, and it masks everything that you do.
Stupid.
And then everyone's like... Can you help us out, Mr. Harada?
You delete this, please?
Yeah. And he's...
Strike this from the earth.
And, well, he did.
Yeah.
He recently laid the ban hammer on a lot of people that did that mod, because they have technology where it shows, like, exactly what happened in the match, and if they catch it, they'll ban you forever, and it's an IP ban. It's an account ban, I'm sorry. So if you own a PlayStation and you're hoping that, you know, oh, maybe my alternate account named Jiggly Bigglies will still work. Nope. Can't use your alternate accounts either. You got to buy a new system or play on a friend's system if you want to play online.
I wish someone could explain to me.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth is the appeal in cheating at a game like Tekken 8?
Well, it's just a matter of a false sense of accomplishment. And the fact that for many years, cheaters have gotten away with it because the companies that have tried to do things to prevent cheating have not been so successful in banning people indefinitely. Like I said, if somebody cheats, even if they get caught, they'll say, oh, I'll just make an alternate account. That's fine. Yeah. Even if I have to buy the game again.
I don't even get it, like, from the player's point of view. I just fundamentally don't understand why you would draw any pleasure from winning that way.
Because they have never grown up. It's simple as that. It's just infantile imbeciles that just take pleasure in making life a living hell for other players while stroking their own online egos, thinking that they're all good. It's kind of like how I feel about people who use AI prompts to make AI art and say, I did this. And no, you're not an artist. The correct term for you is a prompter. Right. You typed words in a prompt and that's what you got. And you're nothing even close to an artist. You will never be an artist because you don't have that desire. You don't have that burning just... In general, you don't have the guts. You don't have the drive.
Damn.
Just give it up. You just give it up, dude.
Dropping some lyrical truth bombs there.
I am. So yeah. To all you cheaters, all you prompters, go outside and hug the grass. Lay in it. Just wallow in it. Wall in the mud here if you can, because you're just dirty.
Yeah.
Filthy.
So last but not least in our small buffet of things today, you brought this up that there are these new Atari cabinets.
Oh, yes.
That are going to be modeled after the Atari Recharged series of games.
Probably by Sneaky Box Studios. Because, yeah, they're the guys that made them. I forget which country they're in, but they're in Europe. And I, once again, have to say, I was wrong. They're great games. Once you get to play them a little bit more and understand, they're not exactly like the original. Some aren't. Some are. Centipede, you know, I had beef with the Recharged at first, but then... That became one of my favorite ones.
Okay.
And I still play it to this day.
Yeah. Because
it's fun.
But, well, you sent me the link to that video. And that YouTube guy is Retro Ralph.
Yes. Great guy. And, you should follow him.
Yeah. And I'll be honest. Like, when you first sent me that and I saw the little link preview, I was like,
yeah.
You know, this is probably like more like one up. Trash, you know.
No, it's just, no, but it's not for home. It's for arcades.
Right. See, that was me having a moment of jadedness, and then no, like these are pretty friggin' massive. Like they look like they're built like tanks. Like, oh, this is what like a giant wood and screen amusement device is supposed to look like. Right,
it's modernized, and they showed Asteroids Recharge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Asteroids is probably my favorite out of all the Recharge series.
Yeah,
and they added the ability to play local two player. They have a two player cab, and then they have a three player cab, which is much bigger. And they'll have exclusive stuff for the arcade version. So obviously the local versus will be one of them. I don't know if they'll add any new power-ups, but definitely the field will be a lot bigger. And maybe like the Pac-Man Battle Royale, the one that it's a four-player?
I think it is Pac-Man Battle Royale.
Is it? Yeah, it's not the Pac-Man 99 game that is now gone.
Right.
R.I.P. Rest its soul. From Nintendo Switch Online. But it's that versus game where you fight against three of your buddies and you know, they're all Pac-Man and you can eat ghosts or you can eat other Pac-Man, which is kind of questionable.
Yeah. Cannibal. Yeah. Cannibalism.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, Asteroids Recharged. It'll be a special version for local versus, and it'll have leaderboards, which will most likely be global. And that's going to be awesome because nowadays, with competition being pretty much a huge factor in games like that, I hope it'll revitalize arcades.
Yeah.
And there's many more where that came from the Recharge series. So be fun to see Centipede, how that, if that ends up being a Recharged arcade version. Because that's an amazing game in itself.
I'm going to make what, if you know me, is a predictable appeal here.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there was some beef between Atari and Jeff Minter
over
the development of TXK, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
However, I would beseech the fine folks at Atari to put aside whatever beef there was or may still be and just let that guy do whatever he wants for Tempest Recharged.
Yeah, that's missing from the Recharged series. Although Tempest 4000 came out, it kind of feels very similar to Tempest 2000.
Yeah, too similar.
Yeah, so I'd like also, to see... Also,
the unfortunate thing, too, is that, like, weirdly enough, the gameplay in Tempest 4000 is actually the same as the gameplay from TXK.
Yeah.
Except it does not have the unbelievable, majestic soundtrack that TXK had.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, TXK fell into this terrible, like, nothing hole where it is basically trapped on PS Vita forevermore.
Isn't that strictly strange how it's only on that side. System?
Yeah.
Is it not on PS4?
Nope.
See, that's so strange. That's probably the only reason you should own
there a PS4. There were plans to port it to all the other machines, and then the legal brouhaha happened. And I think whatever the result of that settlement or agreement, that's how Tempest 4000 happened.
Yeah, but...
Which is a damn shame, because TXK overall is a much better game.
You know, there is hope, though, because, well, as we speak, the Jeff Minter collection from Digital Eclipse... sort of like the Jordan Mechner game.
Yep.
That's out, and you can play his classic games, some that may have never been released publicly until now.
Right.
You can check that out. And guess who owns Digital Eclipse now? Atari.
Dun, dun, dun.
So it's very possible. I hope it happens.
Yeah.
Sweet talk.
Let's put that out into the universe.
If you want, work at
he
home.
He can even work at home. He can smoke whatever he needs to smoke.
Yeah, at home. Work at home. Whatever you want to do.
Jeff Minter do just Tempest Recharged.
Make Tempest Recharged
for everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what you and I and maybe a few other people want. Hopefully, more than a few other people, but. That would be excellent. I mean, Sneaky Box Studios is a great studio, but we need some Jeff Minter in this house.
Yes.
Definitely.
Agreed.
But yeah, that's a great idea. I hope Atari Digital Eclipse, you're listening, because we love you guys, and we would love you even more so if Tempest Recharge came to be.
Yep.
Don't overwork him, though.
We're going to publicly advocate for Tempest Recharge.
Yes, I will link you guys when this episode comes out.
as created by Jeff Minter.
Yes.
Please.
Yes, please.
So we're going to end on that quietly hopeful note for this particular episode of
Fingers and Toes Crossed.
Indeed. Eddie, do you have things that you'd like to plug?
Yes. Oh God, it hurts. We are still on X Twitter. We are on Instagram. We are on Blue Sky. My accounts are on Instagram and Blue Sky, Game Agent ET. And I'm working on a special project. I will hopefully you guys will be able to see later. Mm-hmm. James, how about you?
You can find my inconsistent flow of shit posts on Instagram.
But they're well crafted.
At Super Mario Kart, mostly. Sometimes they're not. But yeah, there are some other things in the works right now that we'll be really excited to talk about soon, but not today. So, at any rate, thanks again, as always, for listening to Eddie and I catch up and talk about this hobby lifestyle cautionary tale that is gaming.
And you did it 49 times. Congratulations. Woo! Next time will be 50.
It'll be our 50th episode.
Yes, sir.
We gotta figure out something.
We gotta something break interesting.
Break out some guests, you know. The whole nine. But at any rate, thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic day wherever you are, and farewell.
We love you. Have some spring fever. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.